This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Here we go.
Everybody is just on the beat screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to the real great one.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It's Wednesday, March the 13th, 2024. This week's show in the first period, we'll discuss the past week on and off the ice in the NHL, including one coach calling out his team, one coach getting suspended, and another coach pulling his goalie in overtime. We've also got two teams officially eliminated from the playoffs. Second period, we'll conclude our look at the NHL trade deadline moves and discuss the long-term injured reserve use by certain teams. And in the third period, we will read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. Before all that, we have our off-ice report, a couple of minutes about something that's been going on with us away from hockey, and I bring in my co-host Doug Stolhan. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Eddie.
What's cooking?
Let's see. Very little. I did go to Santa Anita Racetrack this past weekend.
So your dad?
Place I've been going my whole life with my parents, and spent the day there at the track with my dad. Usual good time. We left winners, which is very, very uncommon. So that was a nice surprise.
I have never been to a racetrack, never been to a horse race.
Well, you better hurry, because Santa Anita, I don't think, is going to be there much longer. The real estate is simply too valuable. They have massive acreage in beautiful location, and at some point, they're going to realize we can sell this for billions. And as we're going to talk about with potential expansion rumors, I think you got that in the show, yes? All right, well, the NHL is talking about expansion, and you know, they're debating. It could be two teams, could be four teams, and you and I are both on record saying it's a terrible idea. The NHL does not have enough.
But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. We know it's going to happen.
Yeah, because they value money more than anything else, and they don't care about the quality of the product.
And they're not the only ones, by the way. It's every league and every ownership group. They're all the same.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, that's that. And, but anyway, so it was a good day. It was beautiful weather, fun to be out there. You know, it's just, horses are beautiful animals. You go and see them and you're like, man, these things are spectacular. And so it was a good, good day. That was about the only eventful thing I had this past weekend.
I'm still, you might be able to tell it in my voice, still kind of dealing with something. I did go to the doctor, and you know, of course, he had no clue exactly what it was, but gave me some antibiotics to take.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that and feel a little better, but there's still just a constant feeling of having to kind of clear your throat. So hopefully I won't be doing much of that. But, and then my wife Karen got sick for a little bit, for a couple of days, it seemed like, and I don't know, just what's going around, I suppose. As far as the entertainment side of things, I did watch a movie that I've been wanting to watch. I think I mentioned it on last week's show. We were talking about directors and actors and stuff like that, and I'm a big Ridley Scott fan, and he did a movie, Napoleon, with Joaquin Phoenix, and I'm a history guy, so it seemed like a win-win.
Yep.
And, boy, that was quite the slog. 2.5 hours, and boy, really, really just crawled along for a long, long time. And
ultimately, was it good or no?
I would definitely not ever watch it again. So I would say that's my kind of, I would say it wasn't very good. No, it was not very good. A lot of nothing going on. I never considered turning it off though. And it made me think, what was the last movie that I was watching and I turned it off? Cause it's very rare that I'll do that. You know, I feel like I've set aside this amount of time to invest in this. So I'll stick it out. And, I mean, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen, but it just was so, so slow. Yeah. There were times where it was, you know, the cinematography and was spectacular and some of the visuals, but just as far as a story, wooey. And I think they did a remake of All's Quiet on the Western Front. I think it was nominated for an Academy Award a couple of years ago, and it's on Netflix or one of the streaming things. And so I'm like, you know what? I think I saw that when I was in high school. I think that was one of those required things we had to watch, and it was one of those ones that was done in like the 70s or something, and they've redone it. I'm like, oh, I'll check this out, and it was, it was subtitled. It was in German. I couldn't make it through. This is so boring. I can find something else to do. And so I did. But that was the last movie I remember saying, nah, I'm good. Thank you.
Much quicker to pull the trigger on.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many options. Yeah, there's so many options. And there's, you know, it seems like our time is more valuable than it was, which I don't know if that's true or not, but to me it does kind of seem like that. You know, I don't have as much free time as I used to, so when I do get some, I'm not gonna, you know what I mean? So
no, 100%. I'm not just gonna sit through just because I started it if I'm not enjoying it. So I didn't set aside time, but I like watching movies, and I said maybe a week or two ago I was like, there's a lot of free movie channels on Roku. And they just kind of show movies kind of seemingly at random, but obviously what movies they have the rights to. It's basically like turning on TNT back in the day, right? When they would just show movies and you'd be like, Hunt for Red October's on. I'll watch that. So the movie comes on With Honors. Do you remember that movie at all?
Yes. Brandon Fraser.
Yes.
What is that woman's name? That woman that was in the skating movie, she was very brief on The West Wing.
Moira Kelly?
Yes. Correct?
That's correct. Correct? That is correct.
Joe Pesci played like a homeless person who somehow...
Correct.
Somehow, I don't know if he got into Harvard or they snuck him in or was there... were they at Harvard?
Yes, you know a lot more about this movie than I thought.
And I've never seen it.
So that is exactly right. Brendan Fraser is living with Moira Kelly, Patrick Dempsey, and actor that never went on to anything. So I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
And they are all students at Harvard. And he's on the fast track to success, this Brendan Fraser. And he's got a paper that he somehow loses. And it is found by Joe Pesci, a street person, a homeless person, a vagrant, an unhoused individual.
A vagrant. I don't know why I like that word.
So he pleads with this person, hey, I need that back. And I forget why, but Joe Pesci is not, he's burning it for warmth, basically.
Back in the day before it was just, I'll just print it out again.
Right.
No, I have to have that one.
Yep. So he's burning it for warmth, and he needs this paper back. So he's like, I think he said basically like, I'll give you one page per day that I get to live at your indoors or live at your place or something like that. So he moves in with them. And the roommates are obviously, of course, upset about this. But it turns out, Eddie, you're not going to believe this. They end up learning a lot more from him than they ever did in the classes at Harvard.
Wow. Who could see that coming?
Not me, man. I was out of my chair. I was so surprised. I was,
so you what? Hadn't seen this before and you decided
I had seen it maybe 30 years ago when it came out. You know, I worked at a video store in college and I got free rentals. So I watched a lot of movies in the mid 90s. It didn't take much for me to say, I'll give this a shot. But I hadn't seen it since then. And I'm like, oh, I remember this movie. It was awful. God bless, it was awful. It just made me angry. It was so bad. Ooh. The accent that Joe Pesci put on was terrible.
Oh, I hate when that happens. What was his accent?
He had this, he decided to talk like this, and I'm going to talk like this every time I say a sentence. And if you get the, and it's like, what are you doing? Like, it's not an accent. It's just an affect, I guess, a way of talking. And I would have broken his jaw if I was one of these people. I come home and this guy's, one, a homeless person living in my home. Surprise. Two, he's, and this was back in the era where hookers and homeless people were all gold in Hollywood. None of them were ever bad people, right? They never robbed you. They never took advantage of any situation. They weren't on drugs. They were just good people who were victims of circumstance. So this guy never gave them any problems. Certainly he was different, but it was just terrible, terrible, terrible film. And I thought, man, this is bad. And then the ending was awful. And anyway, so I stopped watching. I remembered it enough that I'm like, well, I know where this is going and this is awful. So I stopped watching maybe 30 minutes.
I'm going to guess Joe Pesci dies.
Yeah. He was dying of cancer and he wanted to see his son before he died. He had never seen his son. So they help him. They all like split and miss their finals or something to go help him see his son. They drive him across country to help him see his son. Are you out of your mind? Here's a bus ticket, man. We'll all pitch in and get you a bus ticket. We're all going to Harvard. We can afford that. Off you go. Let us know how it goes. Terrible. Terrible. So yeah, I'm much quicker to hit the eject button on a movie if I'm not enjoying it these days. I used to stick it out and see how bad it would get. No more.
Yeah. I was thinking about doing the, I still haven't seen Oppenheimer or Barbie. I was thinking about, you know how that was, that they didn't, they were both released on the same day or something. Is that right?
Similar. Yeah. Very, very similar.
So I was thinking about
maybe doing the double feature.
Maybe doing the double feature. We shall see.
I would be, I would say, I'll be interested to know what order you watch them in then.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, I've had people that I guess I respect their opinion, both say that they're both good. So
I have no doubt both are very good, but obviously both are drastically different in tone.
Yeah.
And the emotions you're going to have when you would leave it. So when you get done watching Oppenheimer, are you going to feel like watching Barbie?
I don't know.
Probably not. But at this, but I think you'd be better off watching Barbie and then watching Oppenheimer. But Oppenheimer, I've heard, is not the, it's Napoleon-esque in its pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, you may be hitting the wall, the fatigue wall.
We talked about it a little bit on last week's show. I don't mind a quote-unquote slow movie if it's doing a good job of explaining something that's going on.
Yeah.
This was just, you know, Napoleon and Josephine sitting in the drawing room just staring at each other. Like, yeah. All right, we get it. They love each other.
I remember, you remember the movie Mulholland Falls or Mulholland Drive?
I remember both of them, but I don't know that I've seen either one of them, but yes.
Yeah, I think Mulholland Drive, let me look it up real quick. I think that was the one. It had these, the same kind of like long lingering shots that just made no sense. No, it was, must've been Mulholland Falls. And I remember we were watching it with, yeah, that's the one, Mulholland Falls. We were watching it with our friend Andrew. And they had a shot from the hood of a car where they're just driving down the road going somewhere. And it's at least 15 seconds. And there's nobody said anything. They're just driving. And Andrew, action. And it was like that. I'm sure there's scenes in Napoleon where you're just like, you expect the director, action. You know, okay, we've got everything set up. Now's the time to start doing something. But Did you leave the movie knowing more about Napoleon than you did?
I mean, you know how this is, how historically accurate these movies are. I don't know. He seemed like a very weird little man, yep. Which could have been, he could have been a very odd, awkward little man.
That's also that was the case of Joaquin Phoenix.
That was a brilliant general. You know, he was brilliant in this one way, but he was very awkward and weird in his regular life. And yet he became one of the most powerful men in the world, which is, I guess, in and of itself interesting.
Yep.
But again, I don't know how accurate that was. Anyway.
All right. Let's get to the hockey because we got a lot to get to. And it's interesting that you talk about the movie and like, I'm not going to give 2.5 hours of my life, 2 hours of my life to something if I'm not enjoying it. That's the same approach I took to the Ducks this season.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch this. I'm not enjoying it.
No, I get it.
Why would I continue watching this?
I understand.
2 hours, three times a week.
Perhaps.
No, thank you.
Perhaps record the game and then flip through it, get it done. And
record it? What year is this?
But you can't, you don't have the DVR capabilities or anything?
On what?
I don't know. You don't have you don't have any capabilities of like DVRing anything?
No.
Oh, well then, never mind. All right, let's get to the first period. We have got a quick note on every game over the past 7 days, and with some of them, we'll discuss them a little further because maybe they were of interest for whatever reason. We start last Wednesday where we had three games on the schedule. The Avalanche rolled over the Red Wings 7-2. Colorado defenseman Cale Makar gets his first career hat trick, or first NHL hat trick. Goals 15, 16, and 17 on the season for him. And Nathan MacKinnon gets his 40th goal while also extending his home point streak to all 31 home games so far this season. Detroit goalie Alex Lyon allowed 5 goals on 40 shots before getting pulled. Maple Leafs edged the Sabres 2-1 in overtime. Auston Matthews, the overtime game winner, his NHL-leading 54th goal of the season. Ilya Samsonov, 24 saves in net in the win for Toronto, while Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen had 25 saves in the tough loss for Buffalo. And the Ducks defeat the Senators 2-1. Alex Killorn, the game-winning goal in the third period for Anaheim. Lucas Dostal, 29 saves in net. That was your three games from last Wednesday.
Well, the only game I want to touch on, obviously it's the a little bit of a foretelling, but we all know this because we're hockey fans. That's the start of a very bad week for the Detroit Red Wings, getting blown out by the Colorado Avalanche. It would not get better from there. And it would end in embarrassment earlier today. Well, they hope it ends, not continues. But the one I want to talk about is the Maple Leafs win over the Sabres, a team that they've struggled with for a few years now. It seems like Buffalo plays Toronto very well. And Ilya Samsonov played very well, had 24 saves on 25 shots. And he has been much better since his issues earlier this year when he was kind of given a break and told to go collect himself. You may remember that of just the, all right, look, it's not working. Why don't you take a step away for a little bit? And since then, he's been very good. And in his last, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. In his last 10 starts, he has 9 wins. So if that's the kind of goaltending they can get from Ilya Samsonov, they will be delighted going into the playoffs to have him at the top of his game, playing the hockey he's capable of in the postseason.
All right, let us move along to a much busier Thursday where we had 12 games on the schedule. And we will start with the Bruins beating the Maple Leafs by a score of 4-1 in what is almost certain to be a first-round playoff matchup. David Pastrnak turned in his 39th goal of the year, and Jeremy Swayman had 28 saves in net. Boston now 3-0 against Toronto head-to-head this season. Flyers down the Panthers 2-1 in Florida. Garnett Hathaway scored with 22 seconds left to give Philadelphia the victory. Goalie Samuel Ersson had 29 saves in net to snap the Panthers' 6-game winning streak. Capitals roll over the Penguins 6-0 in Pittsburgh. Charlie Lindgren, 39 saves in the shutout for Washington. Ivan Morozchenko had his first NHL goal. You may remember he was a first-round pick in 2022 battling cancer. So he has obviously made it back, recovered, and is in the NHL and got his first NHL goal this week. That was one of the feel-good stories of the week. Alexander Ovechkin gets his 18th of the season, 800th of his career. He's now 55 away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. Devils defeat the Blues 4-1. Timo Meier with the hat trick for New Jersey. Goals 15, 16, and 17 for him. Nico Daws got the win in net for New Jersey, 23 saves. And Travis Green gets his first win as interim head coach of the Devils. Hurricanes took care of the Canadiens 4-1. Brady Shea with two goals. Frederick Anderson back in net. He had missed 4 months with blood clot issues. He had 24 saves in getting the victory for him and for his team. The Canucks beat the Golden Knights in Las Vegas 3-1. Phil DiGiuseppe with the game-winning goal. Thatcher Demko, 29 saves in net for Vancouver. And in his Vegas debut, defenseman Noah Hanifin had no points in 21 minutes. Kings got by the Senators 4-3 in overtime. Kevin Fiala with the OT game winner for LA. Blue Jackets surprised the Oilers 4-2. Columbus jumped out to a 3-0 first period lead to help them get the win. Edmonton's Connor McDavid did have an assist to pick up his 100th point on the year, and Zach Hyman added his 43rd goal of the year in a losing effort for the Oilers. Flames knocked off the Lightning 6-3 in Tampa. Yegor Sharangovich, two goals for Calgary. Tampa Bay goalie Andre Vasilevsky allowed five goals on 23 shots. The Predators down the Sabres 4-2. Philip Forsberg, the hat trick for Nashville. Goals 31, 32, and 33 on the season for him. The Islanders roll over the Sharks 7-2. New York, seven different goal scorers in this one. Bo Horvat was one of them. He gets his 25th of the year. San Jose goalie Magnus Crona allowed all seven goals on 33 shots. And the Wild beat the Coyotes in Arizona 5-2. Minnesota trailed 2-1 in the third period before closing out the game with four straight goals. Kirill Kaprizov had one of them, his 30th of the season.
Well, the two games I want to talk about are the first one is the backup to the Buffalo and Toronto game, and that was the Maple Leafs going into Boston to play the Bruins. As you said, a possible and potential first-round matchup. And if that's the case, I don't like Boston or Toronto's chances. They got pretty easily handled, I thought, by Boston for the same problems we've seen for many years now between these two teams. The stars for the Maple Leafs just were not able to generate enough offense. We saw Austin Matthews with over 19 minutes, including over 4.5 minutes on the power play, and he had no points. That's a guy that has to come through with some production if you're going to beat this team on the regular. William Nylander, no points. Again, over 4.5 minutes on the power play. John Tavares, no points. Again, over 4.5 minutes on the power play. That has to change. Morgan Rielly, no points. Over 4.5 minutes on the power play. So if that's going to be the case, if they're going to be able to shut down not only the Maple Leafs star players, but also their power play, that's a bad sign for the Maple Leafs going into a series with them, potentially. They did get a power play goal from Mitch Marner, but he's not going to be available by the end of the week, so we will talk about that in the games to come. But I thought that was a bad sign for Toronto, and a good sign for Boston that David Pastrnak came through with a goal, and Brad Marchand with an assist, and Jake DeBrusk with two assists, and their star players came through when they needed them too. They had power play goals. Their penalty kill was excellent, et cetera, et cetera. So good sign for Boston, bad sign for Toronto. And the other game I want to touch on was, I thought, a very impressive and important win for Philadelphia going on the road and beating Florida in regulation. Samuel Ersin with 29 saves, looked fantastic in net. This is a team that had to play a certain style of game here to try and keep this game close. They can't get into a track meet with Florida, and they didn't. They got the first goal 10 seconds into the second period, had a tie game going into the third, and then just before the end of regulation, Garnett Hathaway gets his 7th of the year to give him a regulation win. The celebration you could see was cathartic for them. Big win against a Stanley Cup caliber team. So I thought that was a key one for Florida to get those 2 points in regulation. Big confidence builder as the trade deadline approached and they realized this is the team we're going to have going forward and we can still beat the best in the NHL on the road.
Let's move on to Friday. Of course, that was trade deadline day. I did see, I think it's Alan Walsh, right? He's the agent who really enjoys to use social media. Criticized, shocking. I don't see him ever tweet anything really positive, but maybe I just missed that. And he's always complaining about something. But he was complaining that there should be no games played on NHL trade deadline day. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, go back and listen to any trade deadline we've talked about on this show in the past 18 years, and we've said the same thing. It's stupid. You got players, you're making major roster moves, potentially. Players are in transit, maybe having to go through customs to get from Canada to the United States or vice versa. There should be no games. And it's logistically not fair to these teams that are playing this day that other teams get the day off and don't have to play and can make roster moves without having it affect the game they're playing that night. You can't go to a morning skate and then be told, hey, by the way, you're on your way to another team and we're not going to have the players we traded for here in time to play tonight. So now we're shorthanded. That's not fair to these teams that have to play. And so they should avoid that. And it's an easy enough thing. The NHL schedule, it would also allow the NHL trade deadline to maybe be a little bit later in the day and make it more of a TV friendly event in prime time where the deals can go until 8 o'clock Eastern. There's no games to worry about that night. And then we see, make that the TV appointment TV that night instead of a game.
All right, let's tell you about the four games that did take place on that Friday. We had the Avalanche edging the Wild 2-1 in overtime. Valeri Nichushkin gets the overtime game winner in his first game back from spending time in the player assistance program. Alexander Georgiev, 29 saves in net, and Nathan MacKinnon had two assists to extend his home point streak to 32 games. Red Wings were shut out by the Coyotes 4-0. Connor Ingram, 28 saves for his NHL tying sixth shutout of the season, tied with Pittsburgh's Tristan Jarry, which is interesting because both those teams aren't going to make the playoffs, but they've had goalies that have had a lot of shutouts. Anyway, Arizona gets its first home win since January the 22nd. Jets shut out the Kraken in Seattle 3-0. Laurent Brossoit, 17 saves in the shutout for Winnipeg. All three goals scored in the third period for the Jets. And the Stars down the Ducks in Anaheim 6-2. Dallas jumped out to a 4-0 lead. Newly acquired defenseman Chris Tanev gets his first goal as a member of the Dallas Stars.
The only game I'll bring up here is this was, I thought, rock bottom for the Detroit Red Wings. Losing not only to Arizona, a team that has struggled mightily on home ice, as you mentioned, for the last 6 weeks, to lose to them is bad. To get shut out is awful. This is a team that's fighting for its playoff lives and trying to secure a spot after a long playoff drought and are in a good position to do so. These are 2 points. These are low-hanging fruit. You got to be able to pick these and put them in your basket. They didn't. They completely whiffed. And credit to the Coyotes, who are still playing hard and giving everything they got every night. But the Red Wings have to get these 2 points. This is a game you got to win in regulation, or at least in overtime or a shootout. And to not even score a goal, to not get a point, is brutal for the Red Wings' playoff hopes.
No doubt about that. Let's move on to, not the best color man in the league for nothing. Let's move on to Saturday, where he had 13 games, including the Canucks shutting out the Jets 5-0. Thatcher Demko and Casey DeSmith combined for 22 saves in the shutout, combined because Demko left with an injury. We'll update that coming up. Elias Pettersson gets his 31st of the year. Winnipeg coach Rick Bonus, who certainly is not shy about speaking his mind, called out his team, saying it was the worst game that they have played since he has been the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. Lightning crushed the Flyers 7-0. Andre Vasilevsky, 25 saves in the shutout. Victor Hedman had a pair of goals, and trade deadline pickup Anthony Duclair got his first goal as a member of the Lightning. Now, the Flyers were down 4-0 in the first period, and that is when head coach John Tortorella apparently had seen enough, as he had some words for the officials and was promptly ejected from the game. But he said, hell no, I won't go. He refused to leave the bench area until apparently he was able to have a conversation with the man who gave him the ejection. That would be veteran referee Wes McCauley. Tortorella stood on the bench, said multiple times over and over, as I'm sometimes a good lip reader, I'm not going. And he wanted McCauley to come over and have a conversation with him, and McCauley said no. And so the battle of the wills eventually saw Tortorella leave the bench area after several moments. It was also a bit amusing, if you saw the game, that Tortorella's 2004 Lightning Stanley Cup winning team was being honored at the time, and his former players, they showed him up in the suite they were in, and they were having a good old hoot over Tortorella refusing to go, having a good laugh at it. Dave Andrechuk was up there, one of them chucking it up, chuckling it up. But we'll talk more. There was some fallout for John Tortorella's decision to not leave the bench area in a timely manner.
It would have been great if, after he finally left, Tortorella went up to the suite and joined his 2004 teammate.
Had a drink, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right?
That would have
go
been
watch the rest of the game from up there. Hey, boys!
That would have been very funny.
And then they cut to that as, you know, as they, in between plays, they show him just laughing it up and, yeah, having a cocktail and enjoying himself.
Yeah, yeah. I assume he just sat in the locker room and watched the game on TV.
Yeah.
By the way, he's got a broken, looks like a right thumb or something. He's got a cast on his hand. I wonder where that came about. I assume, you know, maybe I should have Google searched it. And then I could, you know, everything's on the internet. Who knows? I don't know. We had the Golden Knights beat the Red Wings 5-3. Jonathan Marchessault, the hat trick for Vegas, goals 33, 34, and 35 on the season for him. Sabres surprised the Oilers 3-2 in a shootout. Alex Tuck gets the shootout game winner after Buffalo had an overtime game winner wiped out on an NHL offside review. If you need a reminder, and I did, in overtime, the NHL handles all those reviews, no coaches' challenges. And so they saw that and overturned it. The teams left. They had already celebrated and left and made everybody come back out. And then eventually, though, the Sabres did get the win in the shootout. We had the Stars beating the Kings in LA 4-1. Dallas allowed the first goal 26 seconds in, and then they scored all the goals the rest of the way. That would be four. Wyatt Johnston and Joe Pavelski each get their 23rd of the year, and Scott Wedgwood in net got the win for Dallas with 24 saves. Bruins beat the Penguins 5-1. Boston jumping out to a 3-0 lead. David Pastrnak gets his 40th, and goalie Linus Ullmark, who killed apparently a trade out of town at the deadline because he's got a no-trade clause, was in net. He had 38 saves in the victory. Hurricanes down the Devils 4-2 in New Jersey. Carolina scored 3 third-period goals to pull out that victory. We had the Rangers blanking the Blues 4-0. Igor Shesterkin, 26 saves in the shutout. Chris Kreider gets his 32nd of the year. Panthers take down the Flames 5-1. Trade deadline pickup Vladimir Tarasenko scored his first 2 goals with the Florida Panthers, numbers 18 and 19 on the season. And Anthony Stolarz had 34 saves in net for Florida. The Maple Leafs knock off the Canadiens 3-2. John Tavares, game-winning goal in the third period for Toronto. Predators beat the Blue Jackets in Columbus 2-1. Luke Evangelista with the game-winning goal in the third for Nashville. And Kevin Lankinen had 32 saves in net in the victory. Capitals defeat the Blackhawks 4-1. Tom Wilson gets his 15th. Charlie Lindgren, 31 saves in net. And the Blackhawks, with that loss to Washington, became the first team to be officially eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. And the Sharks, who will be joining them soon, spoiler alert, edge the Senators 2-1. Thomas Bortolo, both goals for San Jose, and Magnus Crona, 31 saves in net.
Well, a couple games I want to touch on, and one of them you mentioned the Carolina Hurricanes and the Devils getting Frederik Andersen back. He was not in the lineup in this game. He played, then gets the night off completely. So it was Pyotr Kochetkov and Spencer Martin. And Kochetkov played very well. If that's a solid goalie tandem, if they can both be healthy, both him and Frederik Andersen, they will have two good goalies for the postseason. And that's certainly the hope. But a 1-1 game going into the third, Kotkaniemi and Svechnikov, or Kotkaniemi scores to give him a 2-1 lead. Svechnikov, empty netter, and then Teravainen, an empty netter. The rare double empty netter for a team to score. But an impressive win from Carolina. And again, New Jersey continues to try and make the playoffs, but I think they're realizing it is not their year. And then the other one was, it was a lot of games of teams, good teams against bad teams, but this one was two good teams, two elite teams in the West. Vancouver versus Winnipeg, and Vancouver absolutely dominates. A 3-0 lead after the end of the first period, and they did not let up from there. Winnipeg, as you mentioned, only 22 shots the entire game. Vancouver had 20 shots in the first period. Just a dominant performance from Vancouver, and Thatcher Demko leaving is not ideal, but hopefully when we get the report, they know they're going to make the playoffs, so they can use this time the next month to get him healthy as possible for the postseason when they will need him. And if it costs them a little bit of their place in standings, so be it. The important games are after the regular season for Vancouver, but I thought a very impressive win. And I'm not the only one that you mentioned, Rick Bowness calling out his team awful effort from the Jets in what should have been a benchmark game. Let's see how we compete against one of the top teams in the league. They didn't, and they got embarrassed in that game. And maybe that's motivation for the postseason should they meet again. But it also, I think, serves as a reminder that they got to raise their game. The regular season is one thing. The playoffs are a whole different animal. And Winnipeg did not look ready for prime time in this one.
Let's move on to Sunday, where we had five games. The Wild got by the Predators 4-3 in overtime. Matt Boldy with the overtime game winner. This was after Minnesota head coach John Hines decided to pull his goalie late in the overtime to give the Wild the 4-on-3 advantage. Now, had Nashville scored into the empty net and won that game, Minnesota would have forfeited its loser point. Matt Boldy, by the way, the man who had the game-winning goal, admitted after the game he did not know the rule. He did not know that that was the case. John Hines did. He was the man who made the decision and afterwards said, quote, 1 point, 0 points, not going to do us any good. 2 points is what we needed, end quote. And that's
loved,
what they got.
Loved the decision from John Hines. More teams need to take that approach, especially when you're on the outside looking in. We need to gain ground. We got to be bold here, and we need 2 points. And if we can have a two-man advantage instead of a one-man advantage in overtime, let's do that. I loved the decision. I'm glad it paid off for him. I hope it inspires other teams that are on the outside looking in to be as bold going forward.
Yeah, and I saw kind of a breakdown of it, and it actually was, you know, it seems like he had a bit more thought in it, that it was just, let's roll the dice. He talked about how, you know, the record in shootouts for Minnesota as opposed to Nashville was heavily favored in for the Predators. And apparently they had whatever the four out there, they were all rested and ready to go. It was late in the overtime. So if it didn't work out, you still had an option of going to the shootout. But it kind of reminded me of the Super Bowl where some of the 49er players didn't know the overtime rule when they went to overtime. But Matt Boldy saying, I had no idea that if they scored an empty netter, we didn't get a point out of it. But and that's the kind of thing, you know, I would think he probably has a bit of a bigger picture in mind too. You do something bold like that, showing confidence in your team, it works out. Maybe it's something that kind of, you know, helps to bring them together, helps to fire them up. And maybe it's bigger than just getting that, that 2 points as well. Who knows?
I wonder how much the Predators knew. Forget Matt Boldy.
Yeah.
Did the Predators know that? Like, hey, how aware were they that there was an empty net and that they could,
I'm sure they were aware there was an empty net, but
get that thing down there at any cost, you know, chip it into the neutral zone, throw it high and try and skate under it and just chip it in. Easy win here. And yet they could not. So there's definitely risk for John Hines in the Wild or any team that does this, but it's worth it because what do you got to lose? You're on the outside of the playoff race. You got a lot of teams. And like you said, 1 point's not going to gain them the ground they need. They need two and they got it.
You remember, I mean, we've been doing this show for a gazillion years. There was a time not that long ago where teams would rarely, unless they really had a time to do it, take a shot at the empty net. Now they do it any chance they get. So I'm guessing the Predators were taking their shots as they normally would to get that empty net goal.
Yeah.
Oilers shut out the Penguins in Pittsburgh 4-0. Calvin Pickard, 41 saves in the shutout. Darnell Nurse, 2 goals. And Connor McDavid picks up his 24th of the year. So Pittsburgh getting shut out on home ice once again. I'm sure that went over well. Hurricanes roll over the Flames 7-2. Carolina, 7 different goal scorers. And Dan Vladar for the Flames allowed 7 goals on 40 shots. The Islanders defeat the Ducks 6-1. That's 6 straight wins at that point for the Islanders. They had 6 different goal scorers in the win over Anaheim, and Semyon Varlamov had 22 saves in net. And the Blackhawks beat the Coyotes 7-4. Colin Blackwell with the hat trick for Chicago, goals 6, 7, and 8. Connor Bedard added 2 goals, and Clayton Keller had a pair of goals in the loss for Arizona.
I'm not much to talk about in the other
games. Yeah, we kind of already talked about it.
Let's move on. Yeah, and the other games were good teams beating bad teams or bad teams beating each other.
All right, on Monday we had 4 games. The Kings shut out the Islanders 3-0. David Rittich had 26 saves in net. Trevor Moore gets his 25th goal as New York's 6-game winning streak comes to an end. Blues beat the Bruins 5-1. Joel Hofer, 36 saves in net for St. Louis. Kasperi Kapanen had a goal and a couple assists, and David Pastrnak in the loss for Boston gets goal number 41 on the season. Rangers down the Devils 3-1. New York defenseman Eric Gustafson gets the game winner, and Jonathan Quick had 19 saves in net for career win number 389. That tied him with Dominik Hasek for 15th on the all-time wins list. He's now 2 wins away from catching Ryan Miller for the most wins for an American-born goalie. New Jersey, meanwhile, has lost 8 of 11 and are now 1-4 since head coach Lindy Ruff was fired. Jets blank the Jets. I don't think that's possible.
But they blanked the Capitals.
Thank you. Jets blank the Capitals 3-0. This was the first game after head coach Rick Bonus had kind of called out his team. So they respond. Connor Hellebuyck, 23 saves in the shutout for his 30th win of the season. And Kyle Connor had his 27th goal of the year for the Jets.
And I thought an impressive response from the Jets. Capitals are not a playoff team, most likely, but still a competitive team. And they came out, dominated the first period, 12-5 in the shots, took the lead 1-0 on a Neil Pionk goal, and then added to that Alex Iafallo with his 9th of the year in the second period, added another one in the third. So just continued domination through all three periods on the scoreboard, and I thought a much better game from their team. Now, granted, the competition was much less. You get blown out by Vancouver, you come out against Washington and play better. It's good, but you need to see that against some of the elite teams at this time of year. You got to raise your level of play, and I didn't think they were able to do that. Surprising from St. Louis, a blowout win in Boston. Boston, a very good team, obviously, and very good on home ice this season, where they're 21-8-6, not nearly as good as they were last year, but still very good. And for them to get blown out on home ice by St. Louis was the surprise of the night.
And let's wrap it up with a busy Tuesday where we had 10 games to talk about. The Panthers edged the Stars in Dallas 4-3 in a game that many feel could be a Stanley Cup final preview. Dallas jumped out to a 3-0 lead before Florida rallied with 4 straight goals. Alexander Barkov had 2 of them, including the game winner in the third period. Rangers edged the Hurricanes in Carolina 1-0 in a battle of the top two teams in the Metropolitan Division. Igor Shesterkin gets his 2nd consecutive shutout for New York, and Adam Fox had the only goal of the game in the victory. Pyotr Kochetkov had 23 saves in the tough loss, and Jake Guentzel made his Carolina debut in this one. After being traded from Pittsburgh and coming back from injury, he had 1 shot on goal in just over 15 minutes of ice time. Golden Knights got by the Kraken 5-4 in overtime. Jack Eichel, his 20th, was the overtime game winner, and Jonathan Marchessault had 2 more goals, numbers 36 and 37 for him. Flyers down the Sharks 3-2. Owen Tippett with the game winner in the third period, with assistant coaches Brad Shaw and Rocky Thompson running the Philadelphia team. San Jose joined Chicago as the 2nd team to be officially eliminated from the playoffs with that defeat. Sabres roll over the Red Wings 7-3. Trade deadline pickup defenseman Boehm Byram had 2 goals for Buffalo, as they have won 8 of 13 to keep their faint playoff hopes alive. Detroit, meanwhile, after a 6-game winning streak, have now lost 6 in a row. Senators knocked off the Penguins 2-1 in overtime. Drake Batherson, OT game winner for Ottawa. Jonas Korpisalo, 34 saves in net. Tristan Jarry, 37 saves in the tough loss for Pittsburgh, who's now lost 7 of 8. Avalanche beat the Flames in Calgary 6-2. Colorado was down 2-1 in the first period, then scored the next 5 goals, all in the second period. Mikko Rantanen had 2 of them, and Nathan MacKinnon gets his 41st of the year. Wild beat the Coyotes 4-1. Kirill Kaprizov, 2 goals, and Marc-Andre Fleury had 21 saves in net. Minnesota's won 4 of 5. Canadiens shut out the Blues 3-0. Caden Primo, 31 saves in net in the shutout for Montreal. Juraj Slafkovský gets his 14th goal of the season. And the Blackhawks defeat the Ducks 7-2. Connor Bedard, a 5-point game for the Chicago rookie, a goal and 4 assists. Filip Kurashev had 2 goals, and Brett Leason a pair of goals in the loss for Anaheim. Ducks goalie John Gibson, by the way, ejected in this game because he crossed center ice to engage with Chicago goalie Peter Mrazek when there was a scrum behind the Blackhawks net. And if you didn't know the rule, you're not supposed to do that if you're a goaltender.
I get the rule, and I'm fine with that. You cross center ice. That's an ejection, a game misconduct. That's fine. But I absolutely support it for a few reasons. One, what do the Ducks care? They're not going anywhere. The games don't matter. And two, Peter Mrazek was getting involved in the fights.
Yes, that is why John Gibson came over. It wasn't because...
It's like there was a full line dance, 5-on-5. Everybody pick a partner and start throwing hands. And then Peter Mrazek, who has no partner, goes over and starts getting involved and starts grabbing people. And it's like,
I would say if the other goalie gets involved, I think the right. other goalie should be allowed to cross center ice.
Right. It's like, just because the fight happened on your side of center ice, you get to get involved with no punishment. Come on. That's not right. But very entertaining. And Pavel Minchikov absolutely destroyed somebody. I don't even know who it was, but landed a right hand right to the kisser, broke his nose, blood everywhere. And he had a smile as he went to the bench, like, you know, hey, man, you asked for it. Minchikov did not want to drop the gloves. But once he did, he didn't mess around. So good for him. And good for the both teams standing up for each other and, you know, young teams that are trying to build some culture, a winning culture. Good for them to defend each other and have each other's backs in a fight like that. So that's at least that's the most entertaining thing those two teams can do is get in a goalie fight and get involved. The two games of the night were definitely the Rangers and Hurricanes, as you said, a potential playoff preview and two of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. Shesterkin, again, excellent, really finding his groove. Frederik Andersen this time was backing up. Pyotr Kochetkov got the start. He played very well. But when you give up one goal and lose, there's nothing. You just got to tip your hat to the other team and the other goalie. They were better that night and were perfect on defense. So the Rangers kind of hitting their stride. And if they can win games low scoring and then kick in and run and gun with you with their offense with Panarin and Kreider and Zibanejad, that's a dangerous team once they get into the postseason. The other game was the Panthers Stars, as you mentioned, a possible Stanley Cup preview, but we'll see. A lot has to happen. A lot has to happen.
A lot of people have been talking about that, but as you and I well know, that it rarely happens. Frankly, it seems like in most sports that the two prohibitive favorites, not the right word, but two teams that a lot of people are picking, and they're both very good teams. I understand why, but it just usually doesn't happen, right? We saw with Florida last year, there's usually some fly in the ointment, some weird thing happens, and it just doesn't happen.
Well, we're about to get to the standings and the playoffs seedings. The Central Division is going to be brutal. Dallas getting through Colorado, Winnipeg, just to get to the conference final is going to be brutal, much less than surviving the Pacific Division winner and then getting on. And then Florida, the same thing. They've got a very tough path. So, yeah, a lot has to happen between now and then. I get that that's two good teams, and it was a fun game to watch. As you mentioned, a team that we had a 3-1 lead, a 3-0 lead by Dallas, actually. Sam Reinhart with his 46th, my goodness, goal just before midway through the second period to get them on the board. And then they came out and dominated the third. Two goals from Sasha Barkov to ultimately be the game winner. Both on the power play, stay out of the penalty box if you're Dallas. Three of the four goals you gave up were on the power play. And Sam Bennett with the 16th. Very entertaining game. Sergei Bobrovsky played well enough to get the win. Jake Ottinger played well, but not well enough on the penalty kill. And his team kind of let him down in front of him by taking the penalties and putting him shorthanded. But very entertaining game. And if that was the Stanley Cup final, I think we'd all sign up for it, except for Canada, who would lament the fact that two teams that shouldn't even have, two cities that shouldn't even have a team, are playing for the Stanley Cup.
All right, let's check the standings after all of that hockey action. We have just over a month left in the NHL regular season, which ends on April the 18th. So in the West, we have the same top three in the Central, although it is as tight as ever. Dallas on top with 89 points. Winnipeg has 87 points, still 2 points back of the Stars where they were a week ago. And now Colorado is also now just 2 points back with 87 points, but still in that third spot. But again, that division is completely up for grabs here about a month ago in the regular season. In the Pacific, we have
what it's worth. Yes. Before we move on to the Pacific, yes. For what it's worth, Winnipeg has 3 games in hand on Dallas. So ample opportunity for them to gain those 2 points that they are trailing Dallas in those 3 games. Colorado has a game in hand on Dallas, but Winnipeg has 2 games in hand on Colorado. So the schedule, you can look at it both ways, though. As you mentioned, we're about a month away from the end of the regular season, and yet Winnipeg has 18 games to play in that month. So they're going to have a jam-packed schedule, but they also have more opportunities to gain points here in the stretch run and secure their own fate to be to potentially play a wild card team rather than one of the other Central Division contenders.
And checking the schedule real quick as I kind of eyeball it, as far as any head-to-head matchups between those teams, I do see Jets Avalanche on April 13th. So obviously there's a big game possibly late in the season. Actually, back-to-back games, you've got Jets Stars on the 8th, on the 11th, and then the next game, Jets Avalanche.
Both on the road.
That's certainly something to look for.
And the depending on what the standings look like, the last game of the year for Winnipeg is a home game against Vancouver, which is an opportunity to redeem themselves against the Canucks. You'd think they'd be motivated to play that game well. Vancouver may not be playing for anything, so it could be an opportunity for Winnipeg to feel good about themselves, beat a top contender on home ice, redeem themselves for their effort they put in this past week, and go into the playoffs with some momentum.
Over in the Pacific, same top three as we had a week ago. Vancouver, number one, with 91 points, most on the Western Conference. They've got a 10-point lead on Edmonton, who's got 81 points. So pretty sizable lead there for the Canucks as far as hanging on for that top spot. The Kings have 77 points, still striking distance of Edmonton, but probably unlikely. As far as the two wild cards in the West, you've got Nashville, now the number one wild card team. They've got 78 points, but they're 9 points back of Colorado. So they are not, there's no way they're going to move out of a wild card spot. So it's wild card or nothing for Nashville, which is looking pretty good right now. Vegas has actually slid down to the number two wild card spot. They do have 77 points, same number of points as the LA Kings, but the Kings right now have the game in hand. So that gives them the third spot. So that third spot in the Pacific is still very much up for grabs. As far as the wild card out West, you've got Minnesota with 71 points. So they're 6 points out of a wild card spot. They're also 7 points back of Nashville in the race as well. And St. Louis, 69 points for their hanging around there, but probably.
Not. Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. Minnesota has 16 games left and would need to make up 6 points in that time. It's unrealistic, I think, to expect them, unless they go, what are we talking here, 13-3 in those 16 games. And then you put 26 points on the board. I like your playoff chances. Other than that, I don't think it's going to happen. So Minnesota really has to get on a heater here at the end of the year. So I think our playoff teams are set in the West. It's just a matter of seeding. As you mentioned, the Central is completely up for grabs. Any of those three could be first. Any of those three could be second. Any of those three could be third. So we will have to wait and see on that. The Predators are going to be a wild card team. The other decision is, will it be Vegas or LA that is the other wild card team? And that's going to be a battle in these last few weeks. You're a Kings fan. You do the Locked On LA Kings podcast and YouTube channel every Monday through Friday. What is your preference? Do you want to be third and have the rematch against the Oilers, the team that have eliminated you the last 2 years? Or do you want to slip down into a wild card spot and potentially play Vancouver, who has not beaten you and is kind of a surprise contender this season?
I would rather play Vancouver. There is certainly something to be said for beating the team that's beaten you two times in a row. That would be a sweet first round victory. To get, measure of revenge, third time's the charm. But if I'm just strictly looking at matchup, I'd rather play Vancouver.
Yep.
Let's move over to the East in the Atlantic Division. Same top three as last week. Florida leading the NHL with 94 points. That's 3 points better than Boston, who's in second place. That was also a 3-point margin between them last week as well. So no ground gained or no lead extended either way. Toronto securely in third place with 82 points. At least third place as far as those other two teams. Metropolitan Division, also the same top three, although there was a chance it could have changed during the week, but it didn't. The Rangers with 90 points. Carolina has 84 points in second, and Philadelphia 76 points in third. The two wildcard teams, Tampa Bay moves up from the number two wildcard spot to the number one wildcard spot with 74 points. They are 8 points, though, back of Toronto, so no chance of them moving into the top three in the Atlantic. And the New York Islanders, who could have caught, I believe, Philadelphia at one point this week for third in the Metro, but it didn't work out that way. The Islanders have moved into the number two wildcard spot with 72 points. Now, Detroit also has 72 points. They've obviously free-fallen out of a playoff spot, but the tiebreaker goes to the Islanders right now. And you've got Washington with 69 points still hanging around somehow, and Buffalo has kind of, you know, it's unlikely, but they've kind of, they're in the picture with 67 points.
Yeah, and running out of track for Buffalo, again, only 16 games, 6 points to catch, to make up, and three teams to catch and pass if they want to make the playoffs. But the fact that they are still in contention is got to be music to their ears, that this could potentially be something. They've been playing very well, 6 wins in their last 10 games. Boy, Detroit, just an awful, awful run here. You look at their last 6 games, as you mentioned, winless in their last 6. They got beat by the Islanders 5-3, the team that caught and passed them. Shut out by the Panthers, blown out by the Avalanche, shut out by the Coyotes, beaten by the Golden Knights, blown out by the Sabres. Their defense has fallen apart. They've allowed 7-5-4, 7-4-5 goals in their last 6 games.
And so weird, after a 6-game winning streak where you're like, all right, here we go. We're getting hot at the right time. And then, wow.
I know it's his guy that he hired, but the trade deadline's over. You can still fire and hire coaches. You wonder if Derek Lalonde is in a hot seat position. They had a fight in practice earlier today.
I did see that, yeah.
Between a couple of their players, Lucas Raymond and I'm blanking on the other guy's name that was involved. But the point is, there's obviously frustration in the roster. We don't know what caused it.
Ben Chiarot was the other guy.
Ben Chiarot and Lucas Raymond getting in a fight. And it wasn't a flat-out Donnybrook, but, you know, they were obviously, they had to be separated and were frustrated with each other. It wasn't a Bill Guerin cold cock the guy from behind and knock him unconscious like he did when he was on the Stars, I think. But the point is, they're really struggling defensively right now. Confidence has got to be low. Now, they have a chance to redeem themselves. They got embarrassed by the Coyotes 4-0 this past week. That's their next game, is tomorrow at home against the Coyotes, then at home against the Sabres, then on the road for Pittsburgh, then back home for the Blue Jackets. Those are 4 very winnable games. And those 4 games, I would think, will determine their playoff fate. Because after that, it gets real tough. They're playing some good teams the rest of the stretch. So if you don't have at least 3 wins in the next 4 games, I'm worried about your playoff chances. The Coyotes, Sabres, Penguins, and Blue Jackets. You got to get 3 of those. You got to get 6 points out of that somehow, some way. And if not, I wonder if Derek Lalonde gets fired at the end of the year or even before the end of the year to try and salvage a playoff run. But shocking fall here from Detroit. Did not see this coming, and it's given the Islanders a chance to get themselves into a playoff position, which is very surprising. They have 2 regulation wins more than Ottawa, and Ottawa has 16 points less than them in the standings. They have 14 overtime or shootout loser points to the New York Islanders. So that's where they've made their hay this year, is in being good enough to lose close games. But they're in a playoff spot right now. It's tenuous, though. And unlike the West, where I think 7 of the 8 are, or all 8 are secured, and it's just debating where the seeding is going to be, I'm not convinced that we have much answers beyond the Metropolitan Division. New York is going to win the Metropolitan. Carolina is going to be 2nd in the Metropolitan. And we'll see if Philadelphia secures that 3rd spot. New York does have 2 games in hand on them. In the Atlantic, it could be either Florida or Boston at the top, but Toronto is going to be the 3 seed. I'm pretty confident Tampa will make a wild card spot, but they're still not guaranteed to make it as well. Detroit, Washington, Buffalo. The problem is, who's going to come up and get them? And when you look at Detroit, Washington, Buffalo, and New Jersey on the outside looking in, I'm writing off the Devils. The Sabres would be a great story. I would love to see it, but I'm not a believer yet. Let's talk in a week. The Capitals, I don't believe, have it in them to go on a run and make the playoffs. And the Red Wings,
I give it up for them for just being where they are, frankly.
No, 100%. They are not a very good team, and yet they are still within 3 points of a playoff spot. So credit to them for continuing to play hard and being a tough out every night and being competitive. Detroit's the one that's on the outside looking in of the entire NHL that I think could make it in. And I think if they do make it in, it'll be at the expense of the Islanders, who went on a nice run here, but I don't believe they are for real and can, I don't think they can sustain it.
All right, let's check the playoff matchups as they are here on this March the 13th, and they are a little bit different from a week ago. Right now you'd have Florida against the Islanders. That is a new matchup than it was last week. And the Rangers versus Tampa Bay, also different than it was a week ago. We talked about Boston, Toronto. That looks like a pretty much locked in first round playoff matchup. And then you've got Carolina versus Philadelphia. In the West, Vancouver versus Vegas is a different matchup than it was a week ago, as is Dallas versus Nashville. Winnipeg versus Colorado is the other matchup, and Edmonton versus LA as well. All right, let's get to the news from the past week in the NHL. We will hold off on the trade deadline wheeling and dealing until the second period. We did have several suspensions this week as we checked the Law and Order report. Philadelphia Flyers head coach John Tortorella suspended for 2 games, fined $50,000 for unprofessional conduct directed at the officials by refusing to leave the bench area after being assessed a game misconduct. New York Rangers forward Matt Rempe suspended for 4 games for elbowing New Jersey Devils defenseman Jonas Siegenthaler in the head. Siegenthaler has a concussion. Rempe was assessed a major penalty and a game misconduct on the play itself. Calgary Flames forward Martin Prospisil suspended for 3 games for boarding Seattle Kraken defenseman Vince Dunn. Prospisil was assessed a major penalty and a game misconduct for checking from behind. Ottawa Senators forward Parker Kelly has been suspended for 2 games for an illegal check to the head of LA defenseman Andreas Englund. Kelly was assessed a minor penalty for illegal check to the head on the play. And the Calgary Flames renounced the rights of unsigned draft pick Tapi Rauni. He was recently given a 1-year suspended sentence for rape, which occurred when he was 17 years old. He was the second round pick of the Flames in 2022.
What do you think about the Tortorella fine and suspension where you have to leave it in a timely manner? Don't you think a coach deserves the opportunity to talk to the referee that has ejected him?
I think Wes McCauley is a pretty good referee. At least, I don't know. He seems like he's a pretty good referee, and I'm surprised he didn't do it, but I guess he also probably has been around long enough to know what it was going to be. And it was just going to be John Tortorella telling him, go have sex with his mother or something. So, generally speaking, I think the good officials, the good umpires, the good referees will be good communicators. But like I said, maybe those two guys have been around long enough. Maybe that he knew that it was just, I'm not going over there. And Torts knows what he did. He's been around long enough. But you don't see this, I don't know. In baseball, this happens a lot, right?
In baseball, they can go on the field. They can go out and get them.
Right, would have
to put on skates to get out there after.
That would have been interesting. But yeah. And usually with the umpires, unless they make physical contact, or the managers in baseball, unless they make physical contact, they usually don't get suspended or fined, I don't believe, for going out and arguing. They just get ejected and that's it. So,
right.
I don't know. I kind of see both sides of it. I think those guys know each other well enough where I think McCauley was like, I'm not doing this. But I do think the good referees, though, let the players and coaches at least have their say and will listen to them. But and then again, I don't know what Tortorella said to get thrown out. So,
well, yeah, but I mean, he was frustrated. The team was playing poorly and he had seen enough. So yes. I think he wanted out of there, but I think you deserve the chance to at least be heard by the referee other than yelling across the rink and to hear from him of why you were ejected. I'll leave, but you can't skate over here and tell me why you ejected me.
You know
why you were ejected, man.
I will admit I wasn't watching the game. I did see the video of the incident. I don't know clearly there was a reason why Tortorella was upset. There was a call he didn't agree with. So at least explain why you called that call.
Right.
Right. So I get that part of it.
Yeah. I was hoping there was a standoff and I'm like, they're obviously not going to drop the puck with him still on the bench. So him saying, I'm not going to go, I'm not leaving, I'm not going. Yes, you are. And I was like, would they eventually like go get security and get this guy off the bench?
I guess if it came to that, they'd have to, right? They would. They're not going to start the game until he leaves. So,
right. You know, those, the NFL or the NHL officials that we talk to up in the press box, the off-ice officials.
Yeah.
They are always, I mean, what a job. They're wearing their NHL jackets. They're holding court. They have a great time. Would they have been the ones that would have had to go and get him?
No, no, they would. I'm sure, you know, at some point, I guess the players and the coaches even would have said, hey, John, let's get this game going again. You know, let's move on. As far as the player suspensions,
Before we move on, I would love to have seen him do the Bobby Valentine and come back in disguise.
It'd be hard. He's a pretty noticeable guy with his
shave the beard,
sunglasses.
Put on some glasses and a fake fake look.
Matt Rempe is a guy who certainly we've talked about a little bit. He's made a lot of noise in a brief amount of time in the NHL. That was a dirty elbow to Jonas Siegenthaler. Four games, pretty strong. But the Martin Prospecil hits, he had multiple dangerous hits in that game against Seattle where he was just headhunting. Yep. And to me, they're both pretty bad. They're both pretty bad.
It's easier to look at the Rempe hit and say, get him out of here, because a lot of people think he's just a goon anyway. He's not out there to actually play hockey. He's just there as muscle. Martin Pospisil is an NHL player. And, he was having a night where he was definitely making a physical presence. I think if you're going to let it go though, that's what it can escalate to. If you don't stop that early, then it can escalate to that. So, but Rempe, that was in the old days.
Yeah.
Back 30 years ago, that was a hit that would probably have gotten a penalty, but not a suspension. We saw devastating hits like that got absolutely suspension from the NHL.
They also would have
long since gone past that.
It also would have had a much different response from the other team. And when a guy takes two runs at two different players like that, I mean, you got to jump his ass, and that really did not happen.
But that's also like you've been on enough teams to know who wants to take on that guy. You know, hey, we got to fight him. Who's going to be the one to do it? Because whoever does it is probably going to lose. And now we maybe have two players out with a concussion. So I get it, but I think you got to look at the. I think the way it was handled was appropriate. Let the refs handle that and get him out of here. Get this guy out of here so we can play some hockey. He's a menace. Get him out of here. He'll be back, and it'll be interesting to see if he plays at all in the postseason. Do you think he will dress in the postseason?
I would be. Maybe a game, like if they're in some sort of a situation where they feel like they need a physical presence, something to kind of take, you know, some players on the other team maybe off their game a little bit, maybe, but unlikely, I would think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And same with Ryan Reeves. I don't expect Ryan Reeves to be in the lineup for Toronto when it's all said and done, but we will see. It'll be we're going to find out in a month's time.
As for the ER report, Vancouver Canucks goalie Thatcher Demko going to be out 2 to 4 weeks with a knee injury. He leads the NHL with 34 wins, so it's Casey DeSmith and Artturs Seelovs as your goalie combination right now for the team with the most points in the NHL. So certainly concern there. If you're a Canucks fan, looks like he'll be back certainly for the playoffs, but that is definitely a concern when your star goalie goes down. With a month left in the season, that's something that you're concerned about, especially if you're a team like that. Rangers captain Jacob Trouba out 2 to 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Colorado forward Logan O'Connor done for the season with going to have hip surgery. And Panthers defenseman Aaron Ekblad out 2 to 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Some signings this week. Florida Panthers signed Gustav Forsling to an 8-year extension worth $46 million, 5.75 average annual value. The 27-year-old defenseman could have become an unrestricted free agent after the season. Forsling at one time was claimed off waivers from the Carolina Hurricanes back in 2021. He's got 32 points this year, 10 goals, 22 assists, leads the NHL with a plus 43.
former fifth round pick of the Vancouver Canucks, Gustav Forsling, with an 8-year deal.
Timing's weird, you know, right at the trade deadline or right around it. Usually these deals happen in the summer or earlier in the season. But a bargain price, I thought, getting him for less than $6 million per year as the cap is expected to go up and locking him in for his prime years. He's 27 now. This will get him into his mid-30s. He should still be an effective player throughout this entire contract. Liked this a lot. I thought it was a very nice contract by the Florida Panthers. And Bill Zito has done a great job building that roster and making it something that is sustainable. And this locks up one of his key defensemen, along with Aaron Ekblad and Nico Mikola, for next year. We will see who else he's able to retain. Brandon Montour's a UFA. Oliver Ekman-Larsson's a UFA. Dmitry Kulikov's a UFA. Josh Mahura's an RFA. A lot of work to be done in the offseason, but this was a key piece, and I thought a nice price to pay for him.
Washington Capitals signed defenseman Rasmus Sandin, 5-year extension worth $23 million, $4.6 million average annual value. He was going to be a restricted free agent this summer. He's got 20 points in 52 games this season. Philadelphia Flyers signed defenseman Nick Seeler, 4 years, $10.8 million, $2.7 million average annual value. He has one goal this year. St. Louis Blues signed Oscar Sundquist to a 2-year extension. Seattle Kraken forward Jordan Eberle gets a 2-year extension. And Hurricanes signed forward Brendan Lemieux to a 1-year extension. Anything I missed? Anything that fell through the cracks? Anything from the new? Any newsworthy thing that you can think that maybe I did not mention?
No. Which one we got this week?
This week's goal horn comes courtesy of the Colorado Avalanche.
It's like three horns in one.
Time for the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and no interview this week as we are concluding our look back at the trade deadline from this year. And Doug, real quick, I don't know if you want to start or finish with this, but a lot of folks around hockey are not happy with the Vegas Golden Knights, who are continuing to use the rules to their advantage. But I can understand why folks are not real happy about it. But do you want to talk about it before or after we give a review of all the remaining deals we did not get to on last week's show?
I think we can talk about it now. I get the frustration, but the frustration should not be at the Vegas Golden Knights. It should be at the NHL for allowing this to happen,
yeah. Yep.
For not enforcing the salary cap in the postseason. That's all you have to do is you have to be cap compliant in the postseason. Those games matter the most of any of them. So why you suddenly get to be $20 million over the salary cap and have an essential all-star roster is absurd, especially when they're doing self-reporting. Oh, excuse me. Independent doctors wink to determine the health of these players. I told you in the weeks leading up, the Kings should have done this with their players.
I agree.
Yeah, you're not. I get that you're healthy. You're not playing until the playoffs.
Yeah,
because we need your cap space is more valuable to us than you are. Sorry. So rest up. Yeah, be ready to go, and we can go get some players that make us a better team.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about this, and they're like, "Well, the player doesn't want. The player can play. The player wants to play." I'm like, "I don't give a damn what the player wants.
No,
I didn't want the player to be hurt all season." But he was. So now, you know, letting him play a week and a half or so, who cares? I mean, is that really going to be the difference in him getting up some big contract from another team in the offseason? No. You're going to do what's in the best interest of the team. You're not going to play until the playoffs. So
100%. And because they didn't do that, then you feel frustrated that other teams do. But you have that opportunity.
I'm, you know, as much as I dislike Vegas, and then there's a lot of jealousy involved, frankly. But I'm more upset that my team's not taking advantage of this.
Right.
So I guess my question is, and you said just have the salary cap. What is the reason the NHL is so against this? Is this because the large market teams have more of an ability to spend this kind of money and they want to keep the advantage for the large market teams?
Of course. It's a few things. It's one, it creates a lot more player movement at the deadline, which is interest in the league. If the salary cap was applicable in the playoffs, you wouldn't have seen probably half the deals that we saw made before the deadline. So there's that. Secondly is, yeah, you think the Ducks, the Coyotes, and the Blue Jackets are leading the charge on this? No, this is the Maple Leafs, the Rangers, the Vegas Golden Knights, the teams that don't care how much they spend every year because they want to be able to, they don't want to actually have to apply to the cap. I mean, let's look at, take a look at capfriendly.com and take a look at who's over the cap right now. And you say, oh, what's the salary cap? Well, the cap is, you're not supposed to be able to spend more than $83.5 million on your roster. The Maple Leafs are projected to spend $97.6 million this year. The Lightning, $93.6 million. The Golden Knights, $92.3 million. The Avalanche, $91 million. The Canadiens somehow are spending $88.7 million and suck. The Canucks, $86.5 million. The Kings, over the salary cap at $85.8 million. The Wild as well. So a lot of teams. If you look at who is actually compliant, you have to go down to the Edmonton Oilers, who are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15th in the NHL in salary, total team salary this season. They're the first team that's actually cap compliant. So, yeah, it's just, it's an exploitation for large market teams to do exactly, to get around the salary cap. And you say, how are the Maple Leafs that far over the cap? Well, because they have Jake Muzzin, Matt Murray, for God's sake. Again, if you know the guy's not going to play all year, you shouldn't be allowed to use that salary, maybe half of it. John Klingberg, Connor Timmins, and Mark Giordano, all on long-term injured reserve, so to allow them to go $16.6 million over the cap. So unless you want, the NHL needs to be the one to change this, though. Vegas did nothing wrong. Vegas is not the problem. Vegas is not to blame, and you should not be upset at them. You should be upset at Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, and the NHL owners and front offices that allow this to continue to happen.
All right, let's get to the remaining deals that went down at the deadline. And Doug, feel free to comment on these as we mention them if you'd like. But after we recorded the show last week, we had the aforementioned Vegas Golden Knights picking up defenseman Noah Hanifin from the Calgary Flames, the top defenseman remaining available. In exchange, Calgary gets defenseman Daniil Mirimanov, as well as a conditional first-round pick in 2025 and a conditional third-round pick in 2025. Philadelphia was also somehow involved in this. They got a fifth-round pick from Vegas in 2024. I assume some salary retention there of the Hanifin contract.
Yeah, perhaps. Let me see if I can find the details there. But yeah, almost assuredly that was all they were doing was handling the because Vegas is so far over it. So yeah, they are going to retain 50% of Noah Hanifin's contract in exchange for a fifth round pick.
So that was certainly one of the bigger deals at the deadline there. The next day on the 7th, you had the Leafs picking up defenseman Joel Edmondson from the Capitals for a third round pick in 2024 and a fifth round pick in 2025. The Nashville Predators get forward Anthony Beauvillier from the Blackhawks for a fifth-round pick in 2024. You had the Ducks and Canadiens for some reason making a trade. You've talked about this before. It's just like, you know, hey, want to make a deal? All right. Well, you know, yeah. Who cares? Jacob Perreault goes to the Canadiens and Jan Masek to the Ducks. The Avalanche were very active. They picked up forward Brandon Duhaime from the Wild in exchange for a third-round pick in 2026. Oilers get defenseman Troy Stetcher and a seventh-round pick in 2024 from the Coyotes for a fourth-round pick in 2027.
2027?
Yeah, yeah. Avalanche also getting Yakov Trenin forward from the Predators and defenseman Graham Seward in exchange for defenseman Jeremy Hansel and a third-round pick in 2025. The Maple Leafs pick up defenseman Cade Weber from the Hurricanes for a sixth-round pick in 2026. The Lightning get Anthony Duclair and a seventh-round pick in 2025 from the Sharks in exchange for defenseman Jack Thompson and a third-round pick in 2024.
Not the Florida team I thought Anthony Duclair would go to. I thought reunion with the Panthers would be was in the offing, but not to be. I like that move for Tampa.
We talked about the Noah Hanifin, the best defenseman available. Well, the best forward available, according to most, Jake Guentzel. He goes to the Carolina Hurricanes, along with defenseman Ty Smith from the Pittsburgh Penguins. In exchange, the Penguins get forward Michael Bunting, forward Ville Kulvinen, center Vasily Pomeranov, Cyrus Lucius. Boy, that sounds like a Roman senator. I'm sure I didn't pronounce that correctly either. C-R-U-S is the first name?
Cruz.
Oh, Cruz. All right. Also, a conditional first-round pick in 2024 and a conditional fifth-round pick in 2024 for Pittsburgh, and the Penguins are retaining 25% of Jake Guentzel's salary.
Cruz Lucius, believe it or not, born and raised right here in the United States of America. He's a Minnesota native.
Cruz Lucius.
Yeah.
I've never seen it spelled that way before, but okay.
No, Victor Cruz? That's how he spells
it. C-R-U-S? No.
Oh, it's C-R-U-Z. That's how he spells it.
Who?
Cruz Lucius.
Oh, well, it's spelled wrong here then. It's spelled incorrectly here then.
Yeah.
I think I could have figured it out if there was a Z there.
I would like to think so. I was wondering why you were struggling with it.
The next day, we had the Hurricanes picking up Yevgeny Kuznetsov, who was on waivers and now traded to the Hurricanes for a third-round pick in 2025. Washington also retained 50% of Kuznetsov's salary.
And that's why, if you're wondering, why didn't they just claim him on waivers? Because this way they get them to pick up half of his salary.
Malcolm Subban on the move. He goes to the Columbus Blue Jackets, the goaltender. He was with the Blues. I didn't know that.
I did not know he was still playing.
I didn't either. I figured he was still playing somewhere, but anyway. St. Louis gets the always exciting future considerations.
Yeah, free upgrade at the hotel next time they're in St. Louis.
The Winnipeg Jets picked up veteran Tyler Toffoli from the New Jersey Devils for a third-round pick in 2024 and a second-round pick in 2025. The Devils also retained 50% of Toffoli's salary.
The guy you wanted for the Kings, yes? Former King player.
If the price was right, yes. And that price was right for me.
Yeah.
And they paid half the salary. So that was a missed opportunity for the Kings, in my opinion. Kyle Okposo, the captain of the Buffalo Sabres, sent to the Florida Panthers in exchange for defenseman Kalye
Scholin is my guess.
All right. Thank you for your interpretation of that. Also a seventh round conditional pick in 2024. The Avalanche get a fifth round pick from the Ducks in exchange for forward Ben Myers. You had the Rangers picking up defenseman Chad Ruweedle from the Penguins for a fourth round pick in 2027. Patrick Maroon goes to the Bruins, the veteran forward, in exchange for a sixth round pick in 2026. And forward.
I did not know Patrick Maroon was still playing.
Yeah, yeah. Not well. Also, Luke Toporowski goes to the Minnesota Wild as well.
Middle name, pause.
For dramatic effect. The Coyotes send forward Jason Zucker to the Predators for a sixth-round pick in 2024. The Rangers and Wild made a deal. Nick Pettin goes to New York forward in exchange for Turner Ilson. We had the Red Wings picking up defenseman Radim Simic from the Sharks and a seventh round pick in 2024 for forward Klim Kostins. Jake Allen, goaltender, not many goaltenders on the move, goes to New Jersey from Montreal for a conditional third round pick in 2025. You had Denis Gurianov goes from Nashville to Philadelphia in exchange for forward Wade Allison. The Philadelphia Flyers pick up defenseman Eric Johnson from the Sabres for a fourth-round pick in 2024. Bruins pick up defenseman Andrew Peak from the Blue Jackets for Jacob Zboril, a defenseman, and a third-round pick in 2027. Matt Dumba, defenseman, goes from Arizona to Tampa Bay, as well as a seventh-round pick in 2025 for a fifth-round pick in 2027. Goaltender Magnus Helberg goes to the Florida Panthers from Pittsburgh for goaltender Lubavik Weber and a conditional seventh round pick in 2025. Jake Roslovic, forward, goes from Columbus to the New York Rangers in exchange for a fourth round pick in 2026, and the Blue Jackets retained 50% of his salary. And the Vegas Golden Knights making another splash move. They pick up forward Tomas Hertl from the San Jose Sharks, as well as a third-round pick in 2025 and a third-round pick in 2027 in exchange for a first-round pick in 2025 and forward David Enstrom. You had the Winnipeg Jets picking up defenseman Colin Miller from the Devils for a fourth-round pick in 2026. The Leafs get forward Connor Dewar from the Wild for a fourth-round pick in 2026, as well as Dmitry Ovechkinov. The Flames get defenseman Nikita Okotsk for a fifth-round pick in 2024 from the Sharks. The half of the fun of this is me trying to say some of these names.
Yeah.
And a swap of goalies between the Devils and the Sharks. Kaapo Kähkönen goes to New Jersey. Vitek Vanacek goes to San Jose along with a seventh-round pick in 2025. I've never heard of this gentleman before. Devin Cooley, a goalie, goes from the Sabres to the Sharks for a seventh-round pick in 2025. And last but not least, the Devils get forward Nathan Legree from the Canadiens for forward Armand Dardenneau. Or Darandino.
How about the fact that when it's all said and done,
yeah,
the Vegas Golden Knights get Tomas Hertl,
yeah,
and Noah Hanifin, and yeah, gave up nobody from their roster.
Yeah, how about
just
that?
Flat added those guys and didn't have to give up anything to get them, anything off their active roster. So I thought an absolutely awful trade by San Jose. I mean, if you're going to trade Tomas Hertl and you're going to pay 17% of his salary, you got to get better than the first round pick of a team in 2 years of a team that is a Stanley Cup contender. So potentially 25th, 26th, 27th or lower in the first round. That's just not enough, in my opinion, to get. And yes, they got David Edstrom, and I don't know much about him. He was a first round pick in 2023. So, okay, you got a prospect and a first round pick for trading him in the division. That didn't sit well, but great for Vegas. You know, I mean, you can't blame them, as I said, as we went over. And when you look at the top teams, did the let's go through them. Did Vancouver get better? They made their moves earlier in the season to get better. The Oilers made moves to get Adam Henrique and got better. The Dallas Stars made moves to get better. The Winnipeg Jets made moves earlier to get better. The Avalanche made moves to get better. All those teams improve themselves, and Vegas obviously improved themselves. So I think there's six teams now that are legitimate Stanley Cup contenders in the West. The teams that did not make moves, Nashville and LA, I think got left behind and are on the outside looking in. It's a very tough road for those teams. They had the chance to keep up with the Jones and make the moves. They did not. And you could say, oh, we're up against the cap. All these teams that made moves are up against the cap. You find creative ways. You find partners to pick up half the salary of somebody for a late round pick. Arizona, for some reason, was coveting picks in 2027. They must really have a line on the 13-year-olds that are in existence right now and think there's going to be a hell of a draft class that year. But I thought that was very interesting that they were making multiple moves. And I'm going to take a look at their draft capital right now. Arizona Coyotes in 20. Well, they don't even go that far. But if you look at the draft capital for the Coyotes this year, they have their first-round pick in each of the next 3 years. This year, they have 3 second-round picks. Next year, they have 4 second-round picks. And the year after that, they have 3 as well. Third round this year, they have 3 third-round picks. And in the fourth round, they have 2. So they have a ridiculous amount of picks coming up that they can use that draft capital to go out and get some people via trade, and we'll see what they do. But for the teams that were sellers, I thought they did pretty well collectively. They unloaded the players they needed to unload that they were going to lose this summer anyway. The teams that were in contention, I thought most of them made moves to improve their depth, maybe dramatically, maybe slightly, but give themselves some options in the playoffs once they make it. So overall, I thought it was a very entertaining trade deadline. Some volatile moves, some surprising moves, some big names getting moved around the league, and it makes for a much more interesting playoff tournament that is coming up. I think the teams that really lost, the only teams that lost are the teams that did nothing. And because I think they lost their opportunity to make a move. I thought the Kings were in a good position moving into the top 3, potentially playing Edmonton, having gone out and got Pierre-Luc Dubois, having Anze Kopitar still there, having Philip Deneau, they were deep down the middle. They could potentially match up against Edmonton this year. And they retained Gavrikov from last year. They still have Doughty. They have Matt Roy for the remainder of this year. I thought this was the year of the Kings. They've gone all in. I thought they needed to make a move. They didn't. So I think that's going to hurt them come the playoffs. And I don't like their chances of advancing very far once they get there, just because everybody else in the West did make moves. Florida getting better, Boston, Toronto, those teams didn't make a lot of moves, but they are loaded right now and they're still very strong. Carolina, the Gensel move, I thought was the best. Of all the moves, I thought that was the best one. They needed something to inject some life into that roster and to give them reason to think this year is going to be different. Getting Frederik Andersen back, getting Jake Gensel added to that roster, I think was huge for that roster. And I think in the locker room and the belief, and I think that changes everything for them. And I like their first round matchup. They're either going to play Philadelphia, maybe the Islanders, maybe the Red Wings. I love that matchup in the first round. They have, of all the teams, they have the easiest path to the second round, in my opinion. Once you get there, then you take on the winner of the Rangers series and take your chances. But you're already in the second round. You've got some confidence and momentum at that point. So I thought Carolina did the best, Vegas second. And the only losers, I thought, were really the Kings and maybe Vancouver, just because I thought Vancouver moved too early. But it's going to be a very interesting tournament, no doubt about it. And I think there's a lot of teams that can believe they have a chance at a Stanley Cup this season.
Time of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. And before we get to your emails, want to say thank you to all of our friends who support us on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. If you would like to join our group of special friends who have gone the extra mile to help support the show, again, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons. Shout out to our friend Dave at Tally Hockey Jerseys, tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. He is the man who's created the Puck Podcast merchandise. If you'd like to represent the show and support us out there by wearing a jersey or a hat or a beanie, he's got several different options for you to choose from. And of course, if you have any need for a custom hockey jersey, he is definitely the man to see. Great different styles, different colors, and custom logos you can create yourself, and he'll work with you to get those made. TallyCustomHockeyJerseys.com. Real quick, I know you usually lead off the emails, but I wanted to read one real quick, and this is one that wasn't even necessarily needed to be read. But anyway, this comes from Mike, and he says, "Hey, Doug and Eddie, long-time listener, first-time emailer. I've been listening and enjoying your show from practically the beginning. Came across your show looking for hockey news to listen to on my hour plus commute to graduate school back in 2007, and I have been hooked ever since." That's awesome. Thank you. He says, first, thank you for putting out an incredible and entertaining podcast. I've learned more about the league overall, especially the Western Conference, since I'm a diehard Flyers fan and used to focus mainly on them. I also love the banter between you two and find myself laughing out loud at Doug's timely references and Eddie's, what I can imagine, eye rolls to his statements." And that is correct. So the second part, he says, "My wife and I are currently visiting LA, attending the Kings Stars game this Saturday. We're driving to the game from Santa Monica. I was curious if you had any tips, for example, parking recommendations, places to eat before the game, how early to get there. Also, is any kind of a meetup possible before the game? Would be cool to meet both or either of you. Thanks again for all you do. Look forward to your podcast each week." That was from Mike Zito. Mike, the reason I read your email is because I feel bad that I did not see your email until after the weekend. I usually don't check the emails until after the weekend. So I just wanted to say, unfortunately, I wasn't going to be able to meet up anyway. My wife was sick over the weekend. She had a fever. So I decided to stay home and not go to the King Stars game. But I definitely could have had some recommendations on where to park and where to eat. And anyway, so, and again, Mike, thanks for the email. Thanks for listening. If anyone else is out there that is going to come to LA and wants recommendations on places to go, or maybe a meetup, that kind of thing, if you can, maybe send the email like a week in advance, so we make sure that we see it before the game and can help you out. So I feel bad that I didn't reach out to Mike in time. But anyway, so again, if you're coming to LA for a visit, you want to meet up, you want any advice on anything, try and get the email out a little bit, little bit sooner if you can. All right. With that, we now will get
it's
to
funny
our
regular. It's emails. Funny you mentioned that because I specifically told you, hey, there's an email from a guy that wants to meet up at the Kings game this Saturday.
No, you did said, not. Don't say that. Don't
you
say
said absolutely that. Not. Good
that
day,
is a lie.
Sir.
That is a lie. Go on with the email.
Our next email comes from our friend Big Lou. He's in the LBC. He's like you. He's on meds too.
Yeah, he's on number two.
Yeah, that's it.
By the way, I didn't mention that you got a shout out on the Ben Maller show yesterday.
I did?
Yes.
In what context?
Well, Ben will, in an attempt, and he says this on the show, by the way, it's the Ben Maller show, Fox Sports Radio Network, overnights for most of you in the listening in the United States. He will give a trivia question or something before going to break in an attempt to get people to stick around because they want to hear the answer to the trivia question. Very smart, actually. And most of the time, I would say 75% of the guesses are just to elicit a laugh. It's either a funny name. If I don't know the answer, I will just pick some random old name from the past to try and get a chuckle out of someone. Yeah. And then there are also people who will say Nipsey Russell or, you know, crazy, just stupid answers.
Right.
And someone who obviously listens to this show and that show said Doug Stolhand was the answer to the trivia question.
Wow.
So you got a shout out on the Ben Maller show.
Hot damn. If I was listening on my way home, I would have been shocked.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised as well.
My goodness.
And Ben Ben got a chuckle at him. He said, that's the guy that does the podcast with Eddie.
Yep. And if you're wondering what Big Lou, he's on meds too, or whatever. It's a radio commercial here that plays all the time. He says,
what is it
gentlemen.
For, by the way? What is it for?
I have no idea.
Isn't that funny? I thought it was like, was it like, I don't know what it was for. I don't know what it was for. Anyway.
Cheap Viagra? I have no idea. He says, hola, gentlemen. I send you greetings from the city by the beach. Da Beach. As a basketball player and a basketball fan, I considered composing an email defending my favorite sport based on a recent Puck podcast show when you both shared your opinions of basketball, but it would fall on deaf ears. I'm open to hear what you got to say. Most of the sports talk shows these days don't take calls or emails about listener topics, so hard to get an answer to the following questions. I may have posed this to you before, so forgive me if it's a repeat question, but how are television ratings gauged when it pertains to sports? I have watched sports at sports bars, where there are a lot of TVs, many showing the same game. Do all those TVs count at one, or is each TV counted as a separate viewer? This topic usually comes up at the Super Bowl when the NFL brags about how many people watched, and also comes up when discussing the NBA, NHL, or other niche sports and their viewership compared to said NFL. No one has been able to explain to me exactly how each eyeball is counted. You both being in the business, I'm hoping you can clarify. Sorry for the length of the email. I type fast, and I actually omitted a lot of my thoughts. Your amigo, Big Lou. Well, I don't know the answer specifically to this, but my understanding of it is there are still Nielsen families, believe it or not, and those are families that have some sort of monitor in their home that monitors what they watch for how long, and that they get paid for that kind of supervision, their monitoring of their viewing habits. The other thing is the streaming people certainly know what you're watching. So if it's a streaming channel, they know what you've clicked on and they can tell. And I think the cable channels do as well. So I believe it's a collective of all that, but I also think it is far from a scientific accurate number. As you mentioned, if I have 10 people at my house watching a game, they don't count as 10 viewers, and yet 10 people watch the game. So I guess I should tell them to all go home and watch it on their own TV so that it can get recorded for sports or for viewership numbers, but now anyway, that is my understanding of it. And I think it's very unscientific and just something that they use as an industry guideline for how much they're going to charge advertisers.
Our next email comes from Andy, the Leafs fan in Manchester in the UK, who is one of our regular emailers. And it's kind of interesting. Our emailers are kind of like the callers to a radio show. You've got your callers who call all the time. And then every once in a while, you sprinkle in a few new people here and there. Kind of the same thing with the emails. We've got our regulars every week, and then you get them mix in some new people, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, Andy emails often, and he says, hello, Doug, Eddie, and Andy the Boston Penguin. All right. He says, thanks to Andy for his email to this Andy. And thanks to my new PA, Doug Stolhand. If you'd like to read and reply to my work emails too, that'd be great. I have some feedback on my ad for a solar-powered Portaloo. And he says, Portaloo in the U.S., question mark? Somewhere you take port-a-potty, a dump outside. Yeah. Porta-potty. Somewhere you take a dump outside. Portaloo, yeah. Company that needs addressing. Anyway, Doug's attempts to sing the praises of both Brighton and Hove Albion brighten my day. I can't speak to enjoying the Manchester Derby, being one of the few people in this fair city who don't follow either the pioneers of financial doping. Given my allergy to successful sports teams, I've inflicted with a Leeds United season ticket. Back to hockey, I'm cautiously enthused by the Leafs moving to acquire some defensive help. I'll wait until I've seen Edmondson in the blue and white, but I was a fan of Ilya Lyubushkin last time around in Toronto. Maybe we'll have made a blockbuster move before this is read. So on and off chance, please read the following statement. Acquiring insert name is the final puzzle piece, and we are now favorites for the cup. I reserve the right to disavow this opinion when the Leafs lose in the first round. That is from Andy, the Leafs fan in Manchester, UK. And the Leafs didn't do too much.
Well, no, but they don't have too many needs either. They did solidify their defensive depth, which was needed. They're going to need Samsonov to be good, and they're going to need their star players to come through in the big games. And if that happens, they can control their own fate and go pretty far. And if not, we all have seen that movie before. Our next email comes from Dave Taylor. He says, hey, fellas. Hope you two are feeling better. I am gearing up for a busy few days. First is my annual Red Wing Coyote game on Friday evening. As you may recall, I'm a fan of both teams and make a point of seeing the game when the Red Wings are in town. I do remember that. And I thought of you when I saw them get embarrassed by Arizona. And I thought Dave is either both delighted and pissed at this result. He said, I've been to a few times now to the Mullet, and it's a blast. Now the Coyotes desperately need to figure out their long-term stadium plans, but in the meantime, this has been a fun place. Saturday, I'm gearing up to see the new Dune movie. Your comment about popcorn cracked me up. First off, $20. You sure, Eddie? Last time I went to a movie theater in Phoenix, it was $11. Now, I know California tends to be a bit pricier, but $20? Harkins, our preferred chain theater, used to give you one refill on a large or extra large popcorn. We would simply enjoy the one bag and get that refill the next time we went to a movie. Unfortunately, COVID brought the refill option to an end. The part that had me cracking up the most was, it's not like concessions at a hockey game are any cheaper. Last time I went to a non-alcoholic drink was about $7, and not fancy burger was about $18. Anyway, the playoffs are getting so close. I don't have any illusions of the Red Wings getting very far, but it's just nice having the option of a playoff discussion again. Dave in the Coyotes and Red Wings fan.
Yeah, I don't get food at sporting events either, unless I absolutely have to, like some circumstances, you know, where I haven't been able to get any food. So it's that or nothing, and I'll take that. But yeah, movie theaters and sporting events, I will almost always eat before or after, or even sneak some food in if I can. Our next email comes from John, and he's over in the UK. He says, hello, Doug and Eddie. I'm a Flames fan in the UK. I've been okay with our return for pending UFAs we've traded away, but the general consensus among journalists seems to be that we didn't get enough across most of the deals. How do you think Conroy did? Craig Conroy, the general manager. He says, also, I was 9 when Phantom Menace was released. We had more Star Wars talk on the show. He says, I did watch it a lot and enjoy it, but the original trilogy have been my favorite trilogy, though Rogue One and Andor are my favorite Star Wars films and TV shows, respectively. And this is from John Wallace Howell in Birmingham in the UK. Doug, you got any? Oh, I think Doug went. Doug is gone. Doug is gone. Doug has, I'm giving you behind the scenes here. Doug had a repairman scheduled to show up at some point during the show. And so he informed me that there may be, he may have to leave and go check in on the repairman. So that is what he has done. And while I was reading the email, I did not see on my screen that he in fact had left the building. so to speak. So as far as the Star Wars goes, I'm definitely with you on the Andor. I absolutely loved that series. One of my favorite Star Wars shows of all time. And I actually, I will admit, as far as the newer movies, I actually did enjoy the first two. Didn't care for the third one too much. But obviously, being of my age, yes, I am the original Star Wars guy. And as far as the Calgary Flames and what they did at the deadline, yeah, I thought they did an okay job. Clearly, I will give Craig Conroy credit. He made it very clear early on that the Flames were going to be sellers. Didn't matter necessarily where they were, and they were they've been flirting kind of with a wild card spot, not really, but you know, enough to where you think maybe, and maybe other GMs in that situation who were in a different situation might have been a little more aggressive. Conroy, I mean, he's new on the job. He's going to be given some rope, if you will, to be able to mold the team the way he sees fit for a little while. So, but you know, I mean, Noah Hanifin, you get a first round pick, you get a third round pick, you get a player in return. I don't know much about the player, but, you know, it's a decent return. You got a fifth round pick, you got a first round pick, a third round pick, a second round pick, and a third round pick. So acquiring picks for the future for the Calgary Flames. And Doug is back from visiting with the repairman. What's getting worked on, if you care to share? If not, that's fine.
We had multiple power outages this past week, and one of them was a transformer blew in our neighborhood about 100 feet from our garage, south of our garage. Our north-facing window, Jackie was home at the time, I was not. She said the north-facing window was lighting up, flashing white, and then had this vroom, 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 this sound. And she's like, what the hell is this? This is in the middle of the night. And then a big boom and an orange flash of light. And that's when it blew. But again, that's on the north facing window. So I can only imagine how bright it was on the south facing. So anyway, long story short, part of the house alarm system was impacted and needed to be repaired. And so that was being taken care of today. So,
all right,
all done. Interesting. All done. Yep. Stolhan Manor is back under secure conditions.
Thank God.
Yes. Right. Next up, our email comes from Michael. He's a Red Wings fan in Indiana, and he says, "Hey, Eddie and Doug, just wondering how you guys feel about superstitions. The Red Wings are now 0-5 since adding a jersey patch to the uniform that advertises for a trash hauling company that will not be named.
Ha.
People are literally calling them the Garbage Patch Kids. The Kane effect has waned and injuries are starting to mount. Couple this with the Islanders' up-and-coming run, and I'm seriously starting to believe that the fate of this season may well be decided by that stupid jersey patch. How many games in a row will the team have to lose before ownership considers removing it?" Ownership's being paid. They will never remove it.
No, it's not going nowhere.
They could lose for the rest of time. Ownership cares about money. I've already written the company saying that will not be named, begging them to take their patch off. In my opinion, they could gain more from saying that they paid to sponsor the team with a patch but chose to take it down for the good of the team. That, and who would want their brand associated with such a bad omen? I like that idea. I do like that idea. That would be good PR for the company. If Crosby's jockstrap can make him a superstar, can a cursed jersey patch make the team lose? Let this be a lesson for our other jersey sponsors. Don't add your patch mid-season. Best regards, Michael, the Red Wings fan in Indiana. I had not heard that, Michael.
Neither had I.
That is a fascinating thing. And I love that. I love that that logic. I love the request. I think it would be great of the company to do that. And that would be fun. So that's an interesting one. As for how we feel about superstitions, I'm unfortunately a believer in them. I hate it, but all had that thing where the team is not winning, and you turn it on, and they start winning, or vice versa. The team's winning, you turn on the game, they start losing, you turn it off, they go back to winning. It's just, it's obviously not a factor. It obviously plays no role, but you can't help but, you know, be impacted by it as a fan, I think. So
I think you're like me in that we participate in it, but we're not really believers in it, right? I don't really believe couch matters, but I still, if there's a key moment in the game, I will stand up and stand behind the couch, you know, nervously pacing right. Or whatever. I mean, I know it doesn't have anything to do with anything, but we still do it, right?
Right. I mean, we grew up in an era when baseball teams would wear rally caps and would put their hats on backwards or turn them inside out. It obviously had nothing to do with it, but it was a fun thing to do. And you have superstitions. Players eat the same thing before meals. That does not have anything to do with their performance. But I mean, obviously, if you're going to eat Wiener Schnitzel or Arby's, that's going to impact your performance. But
it could, yes.
Yeah, in a bad way.
Yes.
But no, I agree. We do these things, but I'm not going to flip out if something happens. I had a thing. I think I've said this on the show before. I had a thing in my comedy act many, many, many years ago about sports superstitions and how you only believe in them if they're innocent or they are inconsequential, right? Like this stuff, like where I sit on the couch. Nobody's like, man, I always remember the day the Ducks came back and won that big game. I had gotten a speeding ticket that morning. So every day there's a Ducks game, I go out and get a speeding ticket because I got to have, you know, or I got beat up by a guy that was stealing my watch. So every time I wear my best watch into a bad neighborhood and wait to get beat up. No, you only do it if it's inconsequential. You don't chalk up all the things you did that day to that. So yes, we believe it, but we're not ardent believers.
Our next email comes from Dylan in Florida. He says, hey, fellas, hope all is well as usual out west. How about the Panthers doing even better at this point compared to last year's end of the season run? Loving the play lately. Also over the moon about the additions of Kyle Okposo and Vladimir Tarasenko on offense. Let's go. Good luck to all going forward in the playoffs. Just not the Leafs and Bruins and definitely not the Golden Knights. Go Cats. Dylan in Florida. I feel like Dylan just sent that email in because he's feeling so good about his Florida Panthers. He just wants to share.
Hey, and that's fine.
I agree.
We need more of that. We need more of that because that's the thing. Like, I love when I see people say, I was going to get this product, but I saw a lot of bad reviews online. That's because that's the only reviews that people post. Nobody takes the time to go and post, this product worked exactly as expected, and I'm very happy with it. No, you post on there because you had a bad experience and you go out of your way to fill it with vitriol and hyperbole. And so that's what the wall of comments is. Like, Jesus, look at all these negative comments. Again, who among us says, man, my meal at Burger King last night was just fine? No.
My wife does this fairly frequently where she will actually call and compliment someone and like ask if they can talk to their manager. And usually the reaction is, oh, okay. Thank you. You know, it's like surprise that someone is actually saying this person did a good job and I just want to let you know about it. That kind of thing.
The repairman just left and he asked me to, you're going to get a survey. If you can give me as many tens as possible. I said, what's it worth to you? And I, you know, I always say that to him. Ah, ha, ha, you know, you pay me, I'll take care of you. But no, it's the, I've told the story before about those, how am I driving? Call this number. And when I called them to say the guy's doing fine, they literally did not have a way to put that into the computer. So you have no complaint? No, I'm sure he gets many complaints. He's driving just fine. I just want to put one good one on the record. We don't actually have an input for that. You know, swerving, cut me off, driving too fast, driving too slow. Sure. But the rest of them, yeah. So by all means, email when your team's doing well and you're happy. Our next email comes from Jim, and he's a German fella. And he says, happy post-trade deadline, gentlemen. I want to thank Doug for the continued laughs each week. In last week's episode, Doug had me laughing during the off-ice report when he was asked if he would watch Wonka, since it starts Timothée Chalamet. Doug's answer is, if it is, isn't it a kid's movie? He's an adult who has no use watching kids' movie, but what made me laugh is that Doug is also the person who says he will watch or read anything that has Hawkman. Isn't Hawkman something that was created for kids? A long time ago, yes. If you read comics, they're not for kids anymore. I'll say that. Haven't been for a long time, probably. I made that mistake for a long time. But no, I get what you're saying. Yes.
Do they? Well, I have a question. Remind me, but continue with the email if it's if there's more.
Well, Jim has a serious question. He says that I might not like. Didn't you make a bet a year or two ago about how long it would take the Ducks to make the playoffs? I can't remember how many years you said it would take or the bet's consequences. I just remember what the bet was about. Please update us if you remember that bet. I don't, but I can't remember I took anything under than five. Under five, I still am not a believer. Pat Verbeek said after the deadline, he wants to make the playoffs next season. We all do, Pat. Good luck. I wish I had your optimism, my friend. And by the way, don't forget, you control the roster. So get to work, my friend. Jim continues, to all, enjoy the home stretch of the season, and hopefully your team will have games left that mean anything. Amen to that, Jim. It's been a long time since the Ducks game mattered. That is Jim the German. What is your question, Eddie Garcia?
Well, you know how they now have adult-themed cartoon shows?
Yes.
Are there adult-themed comic books? And are they like...
You talking porn?
Not necessarily, but I guess it could have, just like a movie has sexual content. Or are you talking... Occasionally.
Yeah, no, there's definitely... There's
I'm not something... talking about porn. I'm talking about just like an adult-themed...
Yes, yes. There is
cursing, that kind of
100%,
thing? 100%. Okay.
There is something called Black Label that DC has.
Oh, I think I've heard of that, yeah.
Everything under the Black Label banner is strictly for 17 and up. It is more violent, more graphically violent. The language is more salty. But if you read the stuff that is... There was one that... And I'll give a spoiler away, because if you haven't read it by now, you're not going to. And it's also in the first couple issues. So it's if you do want to go back and read it. Anyway, it was a series of comics called Deceased. D-C-E-A-S-E-D. It was not Black Label. And it was about a virus that had taken over. And this was well-timed. A virus that had taken over the Earth and was impacting superheroes. And once they got it, they became... evil, like almost zombie-like, and they had their superpowers, so they were tougher to stop. So the Flash had contracted this virus, and Superman was like, we need to stop him. So he told the Flash to start running around the Earth as fast as he could, and Superman went the other way and flew directly through him, just obliterated the Flash, flew right through the center. Had a bone, though, when it all was said and done, had one of Flash's bones sticking out of him. It impaled him. And then he was infected. So that was the end of that issue. And I'm like, my God, how is this not Black Label? He just flew through a character and they show the guts going everywhere. And I'm like, whoo. So it was fantastic. But that's an example of that's not even under the Black Label. That was just regular DC Comics. It's not for kids. There are they have a brand called YA, I believe, which is young adult, that is specifically for kids. A little bit the stakes are lower of the villains and stuff like that. But I get your point, Jim. I very much enjoy my Hawkman comics and Green Lantern comics and all that stuff. So yes, I get your point.
Our next email comes from Kevin. And he says, hello, Doug and Eddie. Hope all is good with you, Doug, and your bee sting. How's the bee sting? Everything okay?
Oh, it's 100% better. Yeah, okay. I had that day where I was wiped out. It's long since healed. Thank you.
Kevin says, I would have been in the hospital if that had happened to me. I am very allergic to stings and would hate to find out what would happen if one of those killer bees got to me, because they are much more potent than normal bees. Eddie, to answer your question about the two goalies in the line brawl, you happen to be wrong on that one. It was not the late Ray Emery, although he was with the Senators at the time, but he was playing in the AHL for Binghamton. All right, so the fight between, was it the Flyers and the Senators did not include.
He says who it Ray was Emery. If you scroll down.
I can't scroll down anymore.
Oh, well, then I'll pick up. He's got a lot left to say.
Oh, that's odd.
So right. He says Robert Esch was the Flyers player and Patrick Laleem was the Senators player.
Oh, here it goes. There's for some reason, there's this huge gap between between the okay. I will continue. I apologize.
All right.
Yeah. Robert Esch was the Flyers player. Patrick Laleem was the Senators player, or as Steve Lyons once called him, Patrick Laleem. I will start by writing this email. It's an inside joke, I guess. I will start by writing this email while watching the Flyers Sharks game. And let me tell you, it's not easy as I thought it would be. Let's recap some of the Flyers activities this week. I will do that with Daniel Breer's first press conference on March the 7th after dealing Sean Walker to Colorado and then signing Nick Seeler. Right out of the gate, he said that the decision to trade Walker was a very difficult one to make because he really didn't want to trade him with the type of season he's having this year for the Flyers. He never expected to trade Walker, but he said that once the draft pick came into play, that it was a deal he had to make. Now, the Ryan Johansson part of the trade came up when he was asked if he was part of the plan for this Flyers rebuild, and Breer quickly pointed out that he was not at all part of the rebuild, and that's why he was put on waivers right away. Now, they did tell him up front that he shouldn't just unpack right away, that they're going to try and move him by 3 p.m. Friday. That never did happen, but more on this story a bit. With all the injuries the Flyers have right now, he got asked if he was shopping around for help on the blue line, and again, his response was, only if it makes sense to us. We are not going to trade just for the sake of making a trade. I won't jeopardize the future of this team if it doesn't make sense. So then they talked a bit about Nick Seeler, who ironically got hurt the day of his re-signing. Nick was very adamant about wanting to stay with the team. He really didn't want to be moved, Danny explained to someone. He has been here a few years, and he is a true Flyer, and went on to say he would have been a very tough hole to fill with what he brings to the team with his play and his toughness and willingness to stand up for his teammates. With his play this year, he has earned the right to be on the roster for another 4 years. He was in high demand by other teams around the league, but the value in return just didn't make sense. But signing him just made more sense in the end. Now, questions starting coming in about the next 24 hours leading up to Friday, and he explained yet again that he is not actively shopping anyone, but he is taking calls to hear what GMs wanted. He will only act if the deal is right. The one thing he was not going to do was to go after rental players with high-end assets. Quote, we will not risk our future just to make the playoffs this year. If something comes along, fine. We'll look at it, end quote. Danny says after taking questions about the playoffs and what his intention was. After the trade deadline, which the staff did down in Florida with the rest of the team, Danny had another press conference. Eric Johnson was brought in for his playoff experience, but when he was with the Avs, he was not asked to fill Walker's shoes at all, just help out. Now with him and Mark Stahl, they're going to help the young players along in the playoff push and possibly in the playoffs if the Flyers don't choke, of course. The deal for Dennis Gurianov sends Wade Allison to Nashville was done because the Flyers think they can help rebuild Gurianov to be a better player than what he was doing in Nashville. Allison just could not get his game back on track after being sent down at the beginning of the season. He touched on Ryan Johansson and said that not a lot of teams showed any real interest in him and they had no problems retaining some of his salary. If things work out for him down with the Phantoms, then they will take a look at him and see if he can fit in someplace. The most interesting part of the interview was when he talked about Scott Laughton and how many teams wanted to trade for him. Danny explained that he reached out to Scott weeks ago and told him he was not actively trying to trade him, but that he would listen to any deals that got put in front of him. He was very open and honest with him. He said, Scott and I have a special relationship because we played together. When you play with someone, there's a bond that forms. That's just the way it is. End quote. Breer said he's not going to trade him for fair value, which many teams have done. Scott was more than fair value to the Flyers. He brings so many things to the team off the ice when it comes to the locker room and other teams that fans don't see. And it's those types of things that has no price on a person like that. He is extremely valuable and very crucial to our young players in their development. One of the big things they pointed out was last season when Couturier was out, it was Scott that helped step up and help this team by being a leader. He had a major role in the culture change the last few years. He's a player that can change, that can bring people together and help the team focus. He wouldn't talk about next year and what could and couldn't be, but the one thing he did talk about was the change in the culture of the team. He said, quote, look at some of the other teams. They can acquire all these assets they want, but if you don't have the right culture to develop those guys, what is going to happen to them, end quote. Breer commented and then added, that was our first step from the beginning to change the culture to have success down the road, to develop the right way. You need that culture. He was asked how he felt now that he had his first trade deadline under his belt as a GM. He said he thought it was a lot of fun. It's hard trying to keep up with everything, but overall it has been a fun year for him. Doug, as you say, Woof, what a game this team played Saturday night against Tampa. That was an embarrassment for any team. The fact that Torts went after the ref by screaming all sorts of things at him is unbelievable. I think Torts did do the right thing by standing up for Ronnie Attard, but to throw a temper tantrum like my son did when he was five was a bit much. The team was down to only using five defensive players for this game, but overall it was just a bad game all the way around. Sam Ersten right down the line. Then tonight's game, now that it's over, the team just struggled against the Sharks, and as everyone points out, this is not the time of year to be letting your foot off the gas. Now, with the schedule this team has left, our upcoming games are with the Leafs two more times, Bruins two more times, Canes, Panthers, Rangers two more times, Devils, Islanders, and Capitals. Now, there are other teams in there, but these are the teams they need to beat if they're going to make the playoffs. In the end, I really do hope we can make it in, but I'm not holding my breath. Sorry for the long email this week. Your dedicated and faithful listener, Kevin, not from parts unknown, but a transplant from Philly to warm Salisbury, North Carolina.
They have delicious steaks there.
Is that right?
Yeah. You ever had a Salisbury steak?
I don't think I have.
Oh, my goodness. You would love it.
And why is that?
Because it's delicious.
Well, I do love delicious things, but then again, I think most people do.
Yeah. I truly think you would like it. I think it's just a cheap cut of meat, but smothered in gravy and maybe some other seasoning that goes into it. But it was a staple of the Hungry Man dinners back in the day. The Salisbury steak.
Hungry Man. I'm a hungry man.
That Jackie and I have had a long shorthand of, like, because you love the names for products, Eddie, of, you know, how did they come up with Hungry Man?
Chips Ahoy.
Yeah. It's got chocolate chips in it, right? So we're going to call it chocolate chips, but we need something else. Let's lose the chocolate and let's add a nautical term. Chips avast. Chips ahoy. Now you're talking. Avast ye chips. No, but Hungry Man, we were like, there's Hungry Man, and then we had the Famished Dwarf. A Hungry Man dinner is now for kids and Famished Dwarf. But I think you would like Salisbury steak. It's nothing fancy, but it is good eating. You get a Salisbury steak and some potatoes. Damn good meal right there. Our final email comes from Hart. He's in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. He says, gentlemen, I hope you are well. I'd like to start by telling you that when you discuss Dr. Brian Kennedy's obsession with cake, it comes with an extra slice of comedy for me, as I work with teenagers and can't help but hear their definition of the word. Apologies to the good doctor. Do you know what cake means in the young generation, Eddie?
I don't. I mean, I could guess. I hope it's something good.
Well, why don't you look
that up? And that is cake.
Why don't you look up what cake means to in Urban Dictionary?
All right.
I will continue from Hart. The Thomas Hurdle trade is bizarre. He was sent with a pair of third rounders for a good prospect and a first round pick. He has many years left on a contract that is reasonable considering San Jose is retaining almost 20% of it. This is a quality center who would fit nicely on any contender's second line. Mike Greer blew it. I understand the desire to trade Hurdle to really push out the full rebuild, but the return is scant. Look at the big rentals and what teams got for them. What the Sharks got back wasn't much more than what teams like Pittsburgh got for pending UFAs like Jake Guentzel. Look at the haul Calgary got for Noah Hanifin. How does Greer let Hurdle go so cheap with so many good years ahead of him locked up? Most of the league seemed unaware Hurdle was available. I get that Greer might not have wanted to actively shop his best player, but this cost his team dearly. You can't tell me another team wouldn't have paid more. This is the cost of trading a guy on the down low. If I know you're going to say that if they could have gotten more, they would have, but if this was the best deal available, I believe it was the best deal available only because they weren't transparent about his availability. As Ducks and Kings fans, you two should send Greer a thank you card. Why should we? Vegas is in our division. Have a great week, all, with Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. What does cake mean to the kids?
Well, there are a couple of meanings. Cake as in easy. That was cake. That was easy.
Yeah, that's a long one.
But the first definition is another word meaning ass or butt. And the example is, damn, look at the cake on that girl.
Well, Brian Kennedy does love cake. He is obsessed with cake. He thinks about it all the time.
Imagine...
he can't wait. He cannot wait to get his hands on some delicious cake. And
that's why he frequents the erotic cake shop often. It's the best of both worlds.
This is just a picture of a man using the toilet. It's quite erotic. No.
My wife is reading the Patrick Stewart autobiography. How about that?
That is a reference to a Patrick Stewart SNL skit where he ran an erotic cake shop and everything he did was just people going to the bathroom.
which is not erotic at all.
No, but he sold it so well. He's got a great sense of humor. I mean, obviously we all came to know him and around the globe for Captain Jean-Luc Picard, a role he still plays to this day. But he is fantastic as a comedic actor. Fantastic.
He was great in Frasier.
He was great in Extras. He was great on Saturday Night Live. He is a very funny man.
All right, and with that wraps up another edition of the Puck Podcast. Thank you to all who took the time to send an email this week. If you'd like to do so for next week's show or a future show, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast. We're on Twitter @puckpodcast. And if you'd like to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. That will do it for this week's show. For my co-host, Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.